podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing.
Welcome to the Attacking Scrum Lions Selection First Test Special. That doesn't sound very catchy, but I promise this is going to be a lot more interesting than that title made it sound. And just to show you how interesting it is, the big game player Dan Killick has pulled on his selection boots. He's got his fingerless gloves on, like he used to when he was playing outside half. And he's got his selection pencil in hand. How are you, Dan? You're excited about this, aren't you?
I am excited, yeah. Having 3 or 4 weeks off. Missed it. Didn't get the call-up. And
You got every call-up. You're liar. Invited. You absolute liar.
Issues with the phone. And, really, really excited for this pod now. But I must admit, I've been really enjoying them as well.
It's tough, though, isn't it? This is
really tough
making the selection. So if Dan is fulfilling the Ian McGeachan role, I guess that makes me Fran Cotton. And, of course, doing the Jim Telfer role. It's the Mighty Murph. How are you, Murph?
Good, yeah. Thanks. I've tried not to put too much pressure on myself because I think it's a bit of a... bit of an impossible job to second guess this tour. I mean, as you've said in the past, it's the craziest tour ever. And the selection on Thursday lunchtime, I think is at 1 o'clock or something, might just carry on that because there's quite a few positions where it could go in, like your selection could go anywhere.
There is a lot up for grabs. And as usual, the ground rules we'll be doing here is we will be selecting our team. We will also have a chat about what we think Gatland will do. Although, as Murph says, second-guessing Gatland is never an easy thing to try and attempt. But we're going to start, of course, with loose head prop. And this one, for me, personally, is pretty clear-cut. But I want to get your take first, Dan. Who would you select in the one shirt?
The one shirt for me is... quite straightforward, actually, and it's Wyn Jones.
100% for me. Murph?
Yeah, just penned in his shoulder, which he went off with injured at halftime. And I would go Wyn Jones and then, like, total no-brainer Mako on the bench.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a theme for me as I was putting together my, you know, what my selection would be, just about having a really fully loaded bench. And again, Mako fits perfectly into that. He's made some really positive impacts coming off the bench in some of these tour games and did so again on Saturday against the Stormers. So look, there we go. Wyn Jones chalked in. That was a nice easy one to get going.
Yeah, that was a piece of piss.
I tell you what, I think number two is a lot harder.
And I do, yeah. I reckon we could easily get three different answers.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's get yours, Murph.
I haven't even made up my mind completely who it should be. I mean, it's one of those where, honestly, whoever he picks, I think is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, whatever we think and whatever actually it ends up being, it's one of those positions where it's kind of even Stevens and it's just on a personal preference who you think gets the nod. But I think the 100%... throwing in record for all his internationals this year, I'd probably go for that. I'm not sure. I'm still divided on Luke Cowan-Dickey because he's been playing so well. Mm. Is he bulky enough for the early scrummaging? That's my only doubt.
So
that's still my pick.
That's still your pick, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. This one, I totally agree with Murph. There, you could have any one of those. You know, any one of the hookers would be in there, and you'd be very, very happy with them. For me, I'm thinking the scrummaging element to the hooker is going to be quite important, and potentially just that big game player, you know, coupled with I'm looking for someone to come off the bench and make a real impact. So I actually had down Cowan-Dickey to start, but I've actually switched him to the bench. I just think he'll come on like a and just just go bonkers, won't he? And I've gone with Ken to start.
Have you? See, I've got exactly the same game plan in mind. You need bulk in those early scrummages. Same reason you pick Wyn Jones. And Cowan Dickey has to be in that 23 because he does have that explosive element and is the most in form out of those three players. But I've actually gone for Jamie George.
I was right.
We have all. We, yeah.
Three different answers. And you know, you couldn't make a really clear argument that any of us are wrong.
No, you couldn't. How are we going to split this then?
Apart from the one I said about early scrummaging, but is, you know, Cowan Dickey's scrummaging is not poor.
No, it's not.
In the exercise. Yeah.
This one's going to go long into the night, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just whether you think one of the other two is a heavier scrummager for early on in that match. Cowan Dickey, still, I think whoever you choose, Cowan Dickey, say in your two positions where you've chosen Jamie George or Ken Owens, Cowan Dickey is the cast iron replacement because of the energy he brings. So, I mean...
The other reason I've gone with Ken as well is to go alongside Wyn Jones. Mm. And, you know, just looking at that link up there, and that leads into, you know, who's in the second row for me as well. But and then you've got the two guys coming off the bench. You've got Mako and Luke Cowan Dickey coming on, you know, coming on together, who know each other as well. I wonder whether the, you know, combinations and just knowing each other just gives you that extra little nudge.
It's a compelling argument, Killick. I don't disagree with you. Murph, you get the deciding vote as forwards coach here.
My bit. Oh, I've got to choose between your two choices.
No, you can. You've heard all the arguments. Anything to change your mind, or would you stick with Cowan Dickey?
Like I say, it's not conclusive that Jamie George or Ken Owens is a bigger scrummager than Luke Cowan Dickey. You know, they are bigger blokes, but are they stronger scrummagers? Would they add that much to their weight of the scrum? So for that reason, I would go for what I think is the form to the most ball carrying, the most accurate throwing in, and all the other accolades. Therefore, we'll stick with one. If I'm forwards coach, we'll stick with my option.
There we go. Luke Cowan Dickey it is. That was a difficult one at two. I think three is a bit more straightforward. It's Tadhg Furlong for me, Dan.
Yeah, Tadhg Furlong.
Yeah, I mean, Sinclair's been playing well, but then it was like a big dose of reality yesterday when Tadhg Furlong, I don't know if you saw Murray Kinsella's tweet, really. He said Tadhg Furlong is laying down a marker to be the Test 13.
I didn't see that one.
He was that good in the loose, especially picking up from, you know, the base of a ruck and just bursting through the middle and stuff. He was just outstanding. So, yeah, but I think, it, like you say, it's pretty cut and dried for the starting berth, and probably even more cut and dried for the bench.
I agree. I think again, and you think about that, bringing on Mako and Kyle Sinclair, and then obviously we'll have to decide who we bring off the bench now that Cowan Dickey's got the nod. But it gives you some real impetus. Then we know scrummaging is going to be hard, but as the game goes on and being able to bring on, I mean, personally, I think Sinclair is probably the best scrummager out there, but Furlong offers you so much. You know, he's obviously clearly not a bad scrummager. He's done a fantastic job in the Test series against New Zealand and continually done a great job for Ireland. So you've got no problems with him there, but everything else he has, and just smoking into rucks as well and just shaking people up a bit, then, you know, that's what gets him the nod for me. But that's a pretty good front row, that. Wyn Jones, Luke Cowan Dickey, Tadhg Furlong. Racing through this, fellas. Racing through it. Right. Second row. Oh, now, this all depends on what we're going to do on the bench as well. Are we going, as Murph has suggested, with a 5-2 split on the bench? Or
6-2 or 5-2?
6-2, rather. A 6-2 split. Or are we going with a more conventional 5-3? Because I think that shapes who you pick to start as well. Dan, I just looking at your face then, you've picked Alan Wyn Jones, haven't you?
I have picked Alan Wynne-Jones, yeah. Yeah, I've got Alan Wynne-Jones at... Alan Wynne-Jones at five. And, yeah, it does have a massive impact on the bench. I had to write my side out twice because it did change during it. And
two completely different 15s.
Yeah, if I started it again now, it's so tricky, isn't it? Which is the great thing about it. But yeah, for me, I have gone with Alan Wynne in the second row.
With who?
With Itoje.
Okay, Murph.
For a split second, when Dan was saying he's got Alan Wynne-Jones at five, I thought he was going to say and Alan Wynne-Jones at four, and a young Alan Wynne and a young Alan Wynne-Jones at six.
Yeah.
I haven't. It's interesting what you say about 6-2, 5-3 split. I think that'll tell more about the Lions' tactics in the first test than they will about the actual starting 15. Because if we go 6-2, in other words, 2 second rows on the bench and only two, and only a scrum half and an outside half on the bench, that means we're going from up front. If we go the conventional route, then chances are we're going to play more rugby. So... Well, they're going to play more rugby, not us. They're going to play more rugby. So I don't know. I mean, my starting two would be Itoje 4,
yeah,
and Laws 5.
Yes, I had Itoje and Laws. And the Laws one was difficult. I was very, very tempted to go with Adam Beard. I think he's made a massive impact.
If you go 6-2 split, he makes the bench.
I think in that scenario, but Laws just edged it for me again. I think that what he adds in terms of, I think it comes down to whether you want that security with the defensive line out that Beard gives you, or you want the extra ball carrying dynamism that you get from Laws. I think we saw Beard do a lot of kind of tip on passing stuff, which is great. But I think in that first test, I just think we're just going to need that extra ball carrier. So for me, it's Laws and Itoje. Obviously, Alan Wynne-Jones would be fine, and I wouldn't be surprised if Gatland does pick him. But is 20 minutes of rugby enough to get the start? Whereas again, just the opportunity to have him coming off the bench with 15, 20 to go in a major test match, that sends out a big signal to South Africa when you've got a bench as strong as that and someone as talismanic as that. So, yeah, that would be it for me. You're right there, Dan. You nipped off there, obviously thinking you were going to get away with this with the listeners, but you've missed what we selected. We've gone for Laws, and both of us went for Laws and Itoje in there. Any problem or any concerns with you about Alan Wynne-Jones in terms of getting through, getting through a good 50, 60 minutes of a test match, having played so little in the last month? And now you're on mute.
Come on, Jackie Weaver.
Oh dear, sorry. I was rustling around then, Jed, as well. You'd been pleased with the mute, but they're not. I just think with Alan Wynne going back out there, I think he must be all right.
I think he's all right, but can anyone get up to full test speed, particularly against South Africa, when you've only had... If anyone in the world could do it, it'd be Alan Wynne. But I just think that 25 minutes, including the 5 minutes against Japan where he got injured, I just don't know if that is quite enough to get up to full speed. I mean, he looked great when he came on, but
it's really good.
It's another level up, isn't it, playing South Africa in a test than it is coming off the bench against the Stormers. So for me, he'd be on the bench.
Yeah, it is. I can see it. I mean, I'm a massive fan of... Massive fan of Laws, and I was really trying to see where and how I could work him in. But I just think with Alan Wynne, he must be so important to the squad, which is why he's back out there, isn't it? That I just think his presence and leadership and the fact that you can't knock him down. I found myself not being able to stop myself from putting him in, really.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see him. I'd love to see him start. And again, Gatland won't, even someone like Alan Wynne, he won't pick him if he doesn't think that he's the right person to do the job on that day. But yeah, I just think I can very much see him having a starring role off the bench and also then starting the second test. I just think he needs a little bit of extra time to get up to full speed, but will make a big impact as a replacement for me. So I think we've got a consensus there of Laws and Itoje in the second row, with Alan Wynne certainly on the bench. What are your thoughts, Dan, on 6-2 or 5-3 on the bench?
Yeah, I've gone for 5-3 actually.
Yeah.
But initially I had 6-2. So
I mean, you've covered everyone in that squad is getting a throughout the course this afternoon, everyone was in your team at one point, weren't they?
Yeah, they pretty much, yeah. But I've shifted to 5-3. So yeah, I've got do you want my second row bench?
Please.
Yeah, so second row bench cover. I've gone for Beard.
Yeah.
Off the bench. I think he's been magnificent. And anybody that wasn't quite sure on how good he was and how crucial he is, I think has had to hold their hand up, hasn't he? He was unlucky not to get selected initially. He's more than justified his call up, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, thinking about it, just to stick with that 6-2 theme, I mean, Murph, you're absolutely right. It will tell us what the Lions are thinking in terms of how they're going to go about this. But at the same time, there's so many locks in the squad that you kind of get the feeling that he's already made his mind up and he is going to go 6-2. Do you know what I mean? In that whole squad, there's so many, and not including the back rowers like Tadhg Byrne.
Well, look, yeah, exactly. It could go even deeper. Like, say if he goes 2 second rows on the bench, and then obviously 2 on the pitch, he could also go Laws blindside if he wants to really, say, up yours to South Africa and just go toe to toe for 80 minutes, you know, and not play any rugby and just say, kick it, and we're gonna just go, you know, fist fight all the way. That's a possibility, but I think there seems to be consensus that Tadhg Byrne is going to fill 6. Not with everyone, but the majority of people think Tadhg Byrne is going to be 6. So, yeah, and I mean, going back to the Laws versus Beard thing is, especially early on in the game, I think Laws is bigger defence, bigger hits, bigger, and you know, that the collisions and the game line and all this stuff is just going to be crucial. If South Africa are going to play like they did last Wednesday, which basically that was South Africa on last Wednesday.
They will.
Then the collisions area and the tackle area is going to win and lose this game on Saturday.
Yeah.
Therefore, why not? If they're going to play like that, and it's 95% certain they're going to play like that, why would the Lions then try and start getting pretty with their play, when they've got the resources and the manpower to just say, fuck you, and pick massive, massive, massive all over the bench, all over the back five, and go that route. So,
but also,
I hope they don't, because I don't particularly want to see Exeter versus Saracens in the British.
No, but I think there could be a blend here as well, you know, and we'll discuss this when we come onto the backs. I think there could be a bit more up the sleeve, but that doesn't mean that you still don't go fully loaded, you know, with a massive pack and a massive set of replacements.
Yeah, but if you're going to run it, I know Itoje and Laws and different people have played blindside for England and their clubs all the time. Nika Zikwe plays for his club all the time. But if those sides are going wide, you need some pace in your back row. If your team's going to be expansive, like Wales don't pick second rows on the blindside because they're trying to play rugby out wide. So if they do pick a big bastard on the blind side, they're not going to reinvent Barbarians rugby.
No. But I also don't think that you necessarily, by picking someone like Tadhg Byrne, I don't think you necessarily end up playing like Exeter or Barbarians. I think there's something in between. I don't think they're going to try and play exactly like South Africa. I think that when they've got the ball, they will try and, you know, not necessarily, they're not going to start running it from everywhere, but when they're in a good position, I think there'll be a few things up the sleeve and a little bit more creative than perhaps South Africa will be. But
let's, I bloody hope so, because they didn't show anything on yesterday or the Wednesday. So
no, and but I think a lot of that came down to the selection in the backs. You know, like we said, the Conor Murray had a stinker of a game by his standards. Owen Farrell had an awful game and definitely won't start at 10. And then I think that, you know, if you iron that out, and then when it comes to the midfield and again get that selection right, I think there will be a few more things up the sleeve. There were a couple of nice set piece moves yesterday, I think, that show that I think there's a bit more to come from this Lions side.
Yeah, it's very telling though, I think, that 6 of the 7 scorers were forwards. Mm. And even when Reece Samet scored, because of Marcus Smith running from his own sort of 10 yards from his own try line, it was a try that involved that required no involvement from the centres. Because the centres yesterday and on Wednesday have been like freaking cul-de-sacs when it comes to expansive rugby. There's no flow. I don't know if they're being overrun by the outside backs, the people outside them, because every pass they throw is checking the run. Sometimes that's poor play wider out where they're over-eager, you know what I mean? But there is no, like, 1980s France, it is not.
No. Oh, I get that. Let's have a look at the back row then, and we'll come back to the replacements. Dan, who have you gone for in your blindside spot?
6, I've gone with Tyke Byrne.
Yep, so have I. I just think he looks like the biggest turnover threat at the moment. And
you know. Yeah, I think I was tempted with Laws, just to really sort of, you know, boss the back row. But their back row is enormous, but they're pacey as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Laws is slow, but Byrne, I think Byrne's got that, you know, he's a big man, isn't he? So he's kind of the best of both of me, you know, second row size in the back row. He's got a turnover in him, which could be a point of difference. He also picks lovely lines. He's you know, physical enough. He's not a Laws, but he's physical enough. And I think that would, I just like that blend with him.
I generally don't like sixes. I don't like locks at 6 as a rule in international rugby, but I do think that Byrne's a bit different because he's, you know,
except Byrne, isn't it?
It's we've seen him play 8 for the Scarlets as well, haven't you? And not look out of place. I know it's international rugby and then Lions rugby up again, but I think he looks more than comfortable there. I think he's a great turnover threat. He is quick enough to get around the park. He's very, very mobile, and it's just the turnover and the good hands that he's got. I think he's nailed that one on for me. Murph?
Yeah, it seems to be like across the board, people who are picking their sides all seem to be going for Tyke Furlong, Tyke Byrne. And, you know, the thing with him being a second row of the blind side is he really a second row of the blind side? Because the issue with him when he first came into international rugby was he's not really big enough to be a second. He's actually bulked up during this year, bulked up in his lower body and gone even more of a tank. So he looks more like a blindside flanker than he ever has done second row. So I don't see the issue. Whereas, you know, and he's also not slow either. I mean, and even when he was at Llanelli and he was an out and out second row, he was still a mobile threat and a breakdown threat. So it's not the same for me picking Tyke Byrne at 6 is not the same for me as picking an Atoje at 6 or a Courtney Laws at 6.
Absolutely.
So, and you know, all that aside, he's played bloody well on the tour, so it's not much to worry about with him, I don't think.
All right, Byrne it is. Dan, have you got a clear thought on open side?
Yeah, open side is very, very straightforward for me, and it's Tom Curry. I think he's been a sensational on the tour, and I just love his physical presence. He's a big, big man, isn't he? Seems bang up for it as well. I almost thought he was biting the South Africans during the game before that. He was so sort of up for it. So yeah, him at 7 for me, top world class player.
Same for me. I think there's more to come as well. I think he's got a big performance up his sleeve, and I'm hoping that comes in the first test. I think his best form is really, really strong. I thought we got a good glimpse of that against South Africa A. And for me, he slots into that. He's a proper turnover threat. He's physical, like Dan says. He's a big unit, and you know, plenty of gas in there as well. Murph, who's your seven?
Yeah, like I say, if you're going to fight fire with fire with the South Africans, I think he's pretty automatic. I would like to be in a position where we're picking a massive blind side, and then in another universe, we're picking Justin Tiprik for speed on the open side, or even, did I say it, Hamish Watson for speed on the open side. But the way this series is shaping up, I think Curry is an automatic choice. And I would echo the size of the guy, because you see him stood next to Navidi, and Jesus.
I think we mentioned it midweek, that spider cam top down, and it's just like he looks like almost twice as wide as Navidi. He's a big, big unit. And
you need a wide angle, don't you, for him?
He is.
On the Watson, I get that, because I actually really fancied sort of a six, you know, him at six. Or the other way around, you know, Watson basically in the back row. But yeah, as this goes on, you just know that it's just going to be that absolute physical, you know, just arm wrestle, isn't it? And you've just got to go toe to toe. And Watson, he's been good, isn't he? But he has missed a couple of hits. But it's just the bigger man, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought he's ridden tackles well. He's looked good with ball in hand, but seven was such a difficult shirt to get your hands on. And I think that performance from Curry midweek pretty much cemented it. And it's tough, isn't it? Because if you got the opportunity, and we said this on our on our podcast on Wednesday night, is if you got the opportunity and you took it on against South Africa, it almost puts you straight into the side. Whereas the other opportunities, you know, if you played well against the Golden Lions, or against one of the five games we played against the Sharks, it doesn't count for as much. Because I thought Navidi was great in his first outing, but he was just a little bit quiet for Navidi against South Africa A, and I think those things are quite telling, and that's what those big tour games are there for. So yeah, it looks like it's Curry all round. And then that just leaves the number eight, which it's just Toby for me straight away.
Matt Dawson disagrees.
Does he? Oh, there
he does.
that comes as little surprise.
Yeah.
A man who is built a post-playing career of being generally just trying to be on the contrary of common sense. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be Toby, hasn't it? I know, obviously, we're a little bit biased on this, but the guy is the best. He's the best eight out there. On his day, he is the best eight in the world. And for me, it's nailed on.
Yeah, Sam Simmons is really good, but I think the issue with Eddie Jones not picking him was his kind of tight work, if you like. Breakdown work, defence work, and that does actually show. That does actually show on this tour that Faletau, when he's on the pitch, is doing more of that than Sam Simmons is. Sam Simmons is really eye catching, and when he plays for Exeter, they're so dominant at the front. He gets the opportunity to hang around on the wing.
Yeah,
you won't be able to hang around on the wing in South Africa unless it's a deliberate ploy where they're going to do a crossing or kick to you. You know. You haven't got time to hang out with South Africa. You've got to be in the fight the whole time, and that is not it. I don't think that's one of Sam Simmons' strengths.
No, I would agree with that. I think the other thing, just slightly as well, if we look at this pack that we've picked here, of the players we've selected, Tyke Furlong, Maritoji, Toby Faletau have all played Lions tests. Did Laws featured in a test match? I'm not sure.
He I would have thought have, so. Maybe not a starter, but
might have off the bench. But I think that big match experience, again, it's a big ask for Simmons, who's finding his feet at international level and doing so very well. But it's a big ask to ask him to start in that test. So for me, it was that's another factor into the no brainer. All right, then it's settled. There's your pack. Wynn Jones, Luke Cowan-Dickie, Tyke Furlong, Maritoji, Courtney Laws, Tyke Byrne, Tom Curry, and Toby Faletau. Right, let's take a quick break, then we'll come back and have a look at the backs. Welcome to the second half of the Attacking Scrum Lions Squad Selection First Test Special, as nobody is calling it.
Rolls
off the tongue, doesn't it? Let's hope some of the Lions' back play is a bit more fluid than my wordplay.
Not so far, anyway.
Well, no. Dan, let's quickly get your take on that as a man who likes to hang out in the backs. What have you made of the Lions in the backs so far on this tour?
Haven't seen much, have we, really? Murph mentioned it there in the first half. In terms of centres, it's very, you know, I think we've been keeping a good bit back, and we can link the 10 to that as well. Been putting a lot of balls up in the air, haven't we? And then we've seen the wingers work some nice tries and quite a bit out of nothing. But I think we don't want to show them anything, because they're just gonna watch the tapes, aren't they, and look to line you up and smash, and then they've got players that can create stuff when there's an error. So I just think a lot of it is quite deliberate. We're not going to be playing like this without any creativity at all. I just can't see that. But it's part of it's probably going to help as well, because I don't think we're going to be allowed to. There's not going to be too much room out there.
All right, let's take a look at the halfbacks then. Murph, 9.
Connor Murray.
Same here. And obviously Skipper, given that Alan Wynne-Jones we've put on the bench. Dan, you're 9?
Yeah, I've gone with Murray as well.
I don't really see those being... I thought Tommy Price give a good account of himself against the Stormers. But again, I just think it's that big step forward. Like, I don't think it's enough to say that it's a start. I just think Murray's the best player out of that three and has the best performances at the highest level. So I think you have to go for him.
So some people are raving about Ali Price, and I don't see it. He's been competent. He's been neat and tidy. He's been fine. He's not going to make a line break. You know, he might have made one on this tour because he's up against no opposition, but he's not going to cut South Africa to ribbons. Neither is Conor Murray, by the way. But Conor Murray is better at the tactical stuff than Tommy Price. You have to no one could, even the most ardent Scottish rugby fan, could deny that Conor Murray is better tactically than Ali Price. So for me, although Ali's been okay, he hasn't been amazing. He hasn't been enough to burst his way into the test side, I don't think. And if you go with Conor Murray, Gareth Davis is the change of emphasis on the bench.
That's the one where I think, I agree that Ali Price hasn't done enough to get into the starting lineup. I'd be tempted to have a look at him on the bench because of the change in tempo, as Dan would say. I think that it does perhaps offer you that. And again, I just don't think we've seen particularly good form from Gareth Davis of late. And that would be my worry there, and just give Price the edge for me. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that Price is actually the informed 9 on the tour.
I agree, yeah.
And it's not difficult, because the 9s have been so, have been so bad. But it's we're probably all going along the same line here, aren't we? That is, Conor Murray is tactically the best. This game is going to be an arm wrestle. It's going to come down to tactics. And on his day, Murray's a big game player, isn't he? He hasn't been playing particularly well, has he? But then he showed up in the Six Nations against England. That was fantastic. So Gatland will know, and we know, that he turns up for the big games, doesn't he? And can do more often than not. So I think it's really harsh on Price, and I think a lot of people are going to be unhappy about it. But obviously, the Scots, you know, but I think he's going to miss out altogether, because as Murph said, you know, Gareth is someone that if you want to change something, and yeah, he's got mistakes in him, but he can he scores, doesn't he? He regularly scores, does something, and can create an opportunity. So
it's one of those where you need a crystal ball, because if you're in a position where you need to close out the game, you definitely would go Tommy on the bench. If you're in a position where you're a couple of points behind it or 4 points behind and you've got to score late on, you don't want Tommy, you want Gareth. So it's tricky, really tricky to know what position you're going to be in with 20 minutes to go.
I half expected Killick to select Lloyd Williams on the bench then. maybe he's on there as he's on there as cover on the wing. Maybe we'll see. But all right. Well, we're agreed on Murray starting, and then I think you boys have made a decent enough argument for Gareth Davis to get the bench spot. As I say, I'd probably go Price myself, but happy enough with that.
We're agreeing on too much at the moment, aren't we?
Well,
I think the centres are put paid to
that. Here we go, you know. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, let's agree on the obvious one of 10 bigger plays, and that's that, right?
Like, it is tricky because of Owen Farrell's only tricky because of the bench position, not because of the starting 10. The starting 10, you're right, is nailed down, but it is tricky for the bench because Finn's carrying a knock and he hasn't. I don't know when the last time he's on the pitch.
Yeah.
Owen is just like, I don't want to kick the guy when he's down, but I just think he's playing awful. Yeah. And then your other option then is a freaking fifth grader from America who's just decided to take up rugby union in Marcus. He's not American, but you know, that's what he looks like to me. And that's a risk. That is a risk. Because say you do go that route. I mean, I would if they went that route, it would signal some sort of intent, and I would be really excited.
I know, but imagine like Bigger goes off with a head injury two minutes into the game, and you're going
right. First 5 minutes, he's had a forearm smash or whatever, which we won't see on replay at all.
Yeah, and it's likely.
And then you've got this young kid in a really tactical battle. Which he's not interested in tactical battles. He doesn't play any of that tactical shit when he does do kicks into the corner on occasion, but he's not interested in that kind of stuff when he plays the Quins, and he's barely even started his England career. So it's a risk to pick him, even though you're left with Owen Farrell.
All of this to me is leaning towards that 6-2 split and it being Farrell covering 10 and 12 on the bench, and someone getting a nod at 13.
Well, you don't. It's the trouble with a 6-2 split. You only cover 9 and 10, and everyone else has got to fill in elsewhere. That's the issue.
We've got a lot of players that can play in different positions, haven't we?
Yeah, South Africa don't have any cover for their back, their three quarters and their back three at all. They have to cover themselves, and 9 and 10 are the only thing that's covered. So that might be, you know, if it is a 6-2 split, then you do go foul. Because of the 10-12 thing. But it's hard. I think 10 bench, although the starting berth, I think, is automatic, 10 bench is really hard.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is hard, but I also think that for those reasons you've said, it is Farrell. And I don't think Russell is fit enough to do it. I'd love to see him there, but I don't think he's fit enough to do that. And you're not going to chuck a 22-year-old kid on the bench in the first test, having, you know. Again, he was good.
I think Matt Dawson is.
Of course, is he not starting?
I haven't checked, but
he's starting. Yeah,
a lot of people have got him involved in the 23. I mean, they have.
I mean,
they're being naive because the guy has been there like a week.
Cracking player, but it will be, you know, those first, even off the bench, when you actually come on to a test against South Africa, well, I don't know why I'm saying this as if I've played in one, but you know, we remember those encounters against South Africa. It's properly brutal, you know, more so than New Zealand is a very, very different environment, but it's just the sheer physicality of South Africa. You're going to get roughed up regardless of what position you play and who you are, whether you've got 150 caps or you've got two. And I think that just the nous of having a bit more experience on the bench, I think you just have to go with that. Yeah. It's
the cliche of the test animal.
Yeah,
it's cliched, but it works, especially at, you know, really high level stuff like this.
All right. Well, if we're assuming Owen Farrell doesn't start in the centres, who starts in your centres? This is where it gets interesting. Let's go with Mighty Murph first.
Do you want me to say 12, 13?
Hmm. Oh, this is exciting. Well,
I think the 13 has played consistently the best performance on this tour, and actually of the ones who were on the in the squad during the Six Nations is Chris Harris. Mm-hmm. And I think the best partner for him is Robbie Henshaw.
Yep. Okay. I agree on Henshaw. I think obviously he has had a few injury concerns on the tour, but he got through whatever it was, 50-odd minutes last week, on Saturday, sorry. I think he's the 12, and you have to almost build things around him. So I've gone with him. I am hoping that Daly will be that kind of... he's played him so much at 13 that he's, like we said when he was selected, he's only being considered here as a 13. Obviously, he can cover wing and fullback. Again, if you go in 6-2, that means then I think you have to have him somewhere in the squad. And for me, I think he is probably the best bet. I think Aki's been solid. Harris, I agree. I think he's done some stuff that I've been really impressed with, and I wouldn't have a problem with him. I just think that you're going to need something in by way of creativity. And even if you don't, you've got another kicking option there. It's a left-right kicking option. So that's why Daly would get the nod for me. But desperate to hear what Killick would do in the centres.
Okay, so I've gone different. I think that Farrell will be 12, and the reason be it is that I know he's been poor, but he is, talking about test match animal, he is an absolute animal. And he's, you know, Faletau hasn't been too sharp, but we've all got him in there, and rightly so. Conor Murray the same. I just think that Farrell will be the 12, and I think a lot of the players as well get a lift from having him in the side, even if he's not quite firing. It's going to be brutal. They're going to be coming down those channels, and you know he can hit and hit hard. Bigger will be up for it as well. And I just think that we've got to be right in that fight, till it's going to go right down to the wire. So for me, it might come as a bit of a surprise, but he's in at 12.
What about 13?
So 13, I've gone with...
Doesn't matter. You won't see any of the ball.
Put a cardboard cutter out there.
they're just gonna have a box filled with Zoom supporters playing at 13. Just a hologram of that.
Go on, 13, I've gone with Henshaw.
Right.
I don't know that I've ever heard a centre combination that excites me less than that, to be honest.
It's not exciting, but
no.
It is.
Well, no,
it
you're
is,
right. Look, you're right pragmatic. You're right about the test match animal bit. I completely get that. And I don't bash. Yeah, sorry, mate. Go on.
I was just going to say, I think pragmatic might be a really big buzzword for the selection. Because it's just, if South Africa go the way we think they are, then you can't. My issue with bigger Farrell is I would like some muscle outside bigger, proper muscle. You know, Farrell's not soft touch by any means, but I think people like Dialende, seeing two outside halves in front of him, his eyes will light up. And so I think you're right that Farrell is a pragmatic option, but he's not a muscle option. And so I think we might end up with more beef than anything else. Is it, you know the back play thing where no centre partnership has looked good on this tour, apart from against piss poor opposition, but when they're faced with any kind of defence, no one's looked. There's been no real understanding apart from, say, Henshaw and Bundiaki, but that's because they're same country.
I could see Gatland picking that, by the way.
Yeah, and there's been no silky play from any of the centres. You know, there's been some good play, but no one looking Jeremy Guskard-esque or classy at any stage. It's been stilted, I think, all the way. And one of the issues, as we've all said, is hopefully they're keeping their powder dry so they don't show their hand. And I really hope that's the case. But I think it's hard sometimes to just suddenly flick a switch and start playing. I think you have to do something, you know, in the heat of battle. And suddenly flicking the switch and starting to go, you know, suddenly looking good is hard to do. And I wonder if the absence of Gregor Townsend isolating, has had a part to play in the way the backs have played, especially in midfield, and especially, you know, the understanding between 10 and 12 and 10 and 13 and all the combinations. Because it hasn't looked good in any game. It hasn't looked top quality in any game that I've watched. That midfield combo hasn't looked good at any stage, even against, you know, turnstiles.
You know, we haven't seen that's right, isn't it? We haven't seen the midfields haven't looked good. And this has been against sort of like average sides as well. They haven't looked good, which you would think, you know, the quality on some of these centres should be turning quite a few of these sides inside out, but it hasn't happened. And that's partly, you know, I think the tour is obviously very difficult. And
a short time to build up an understanding, isn't it? You don't have time to work those combinations. So maybe that's it. I don't know.
And the combos, it's, you know, Henshaw and Aki, it's tempting, isn't it? But because there hasn't been that time, I just think it's going to be too hard maybe for them to move away from the person that they know will and can deliver in the big games when it matters.
To go back to your point about form versus class, you know, that age old debate, I think that, like we're saying with Murray, right, he's not been in great form, but we've at least seen a big game from him against England in a pressured scenario to suggest that old form is still there. I don't think we've seen a good game from Farrell for a very long time, you know, not at international level.
I think he's been amazing in the Championship.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Do you think he's got a game in him, though, Jess? He's that type of guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, but there's no way in hell I would start him. I'd start Tadhg Furlong at 12 ahead of Owen Farrell. I just don't
know.
He's so out of form, you know, like he's just so out of form. Like, on the bench, I don't have a problem with it, but I just don't think you can start him at all.
Like you say, he might be forced to on the bench anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think you're forced to have him on the bench, but I just cannot see how you'd willingly put him in the centre.
Henshaw's a risk as well because he's been struggling with a niggle. So there's a hamstring, I think. So, you know.
Henshaw looks more comfortable at 12 on this tour for me, I think. Yeah. I think, you know, you, again, unless you go with Aki alongside him. I don't know that I've been that convinced by Aki yet.
No, but Henshaw spends most of his time inside Gary Ringrose. So, to me, although he can pace, his most familiar position for club and country is 12.
Yeah, is it 12?
So that's why I've gone for him. You know, if Tuilagi was there, it'd be much easier. Much easier. It'd be him 12, and then the rest of you can fight over the 13 jersey. You know, really.
Yeah.
Really,
well, or cool. even if George was there, to be honest, I think that. I know, obviously, he's still making his way as an international 13, but the form he was starting to discover during the Six Nations, there would be a big argument for him.
He had that shirt, didn't he? 13. Before he got injured.
I think he
really
did.
Yeah, you're right.
There we go. Right. Okay. So this is not getting.
We're all over the shop.
Honestly, close to phoning up to get you sectioned for that suggestion at 12. I think it's. I don't know. I just quickly to finish on this. I don't often rain down on Owen Farrell as people really like to do because I agree. I think he is a proven Test match animal. I just think he's that much out of form at the moment that it would be way too big a risk to play him at 12. So we're going with Henshaw at 12. I'm making that call now. 13. How the hell do we resolve this one? I just.
So you're Daly, I'm Harris, and Dan is who?
Dan had Henshaw in his.
So all right, okay.
Dan needs to have a.
Well, we can't pick Henshaw twice, even if we wanted to. Already in a 12. So it's down to me and you.
I've gone with Daly on the bench, but it's
okay.
Yeah, it's I love him as a. Well, I really rate him as a 13, but I think it's a risk to start him, but I'm going against all forms of risk. Although you Jed might say no, you've made the biggest risk of all with starting Fowl. Murph, I don't know what you think on the Fowl. Maybe we need to leave that probably now, don't we? But 13 then. Over to you, boys.
I mean, look, so for me, I think it just comes down to I don't have a problem with Harris, and I think that he's been, aside from getting skinned by Cheslin Kolbe, which, let's face it, any player in the world could get done at any point because the guy is that good. Mm. I wouldn't have a problem with Harris starting. I just think that it's so, so conservative that you are just going, right, whatever South Africa do, we're going to try and match. Whereas I think at least with Daly, you know there's a ball player in there who has got a turn of pace. He does offer you a kicking option in there, and he does have some good ball skills and some good distribution. I think South Africa would be a bit more worried about Daly at 13 than they would about... They might also see it as a potential weakness, but I think that they would have to do a lot more thinking with Daly at 13 than they would if Harris was there, as good a player as he is.
I will see that if you pick Daly, there's better cover across the rest of the squad, especially if there's nothing on the bench. You know, if we...
Well, exactly.
Yeah, if we do the 6-2 split thing, then you've got to have people who can
Daly
play everywhere.
Yeah.
And Daly definitely gets a nod over Harris for that. So I'll give in.
All right, Daly. Let's go with that.
I really like Daly off the bench. When tired legs, they're blowing a lot, South Africa, yeah. I think, and they're hanging on in there in that A game. But I think he's the last person you want to see.
He would only make the bench if you're going 5-3. He wouldn't make
exactly.
a
yes. Yeah. Yeah, I've switched to 5-3, so I'm
The other thing is though, is if you are going 5-3 and you're having an out and out back three specialist on the bench, you've then got loads of other options because you've got Van der Merwe and you've got, presuming that we don't start with him, you've got your choice of Van der Merwe or Lewis Rees-Zammit or some, all of whom offer various different skills. You've potentially got Hogg or Liam Williams there as well. So I don't know, for me, it's Daly at 13 or bust. But anyway, let's go with him, as Merce conceded. And let's move the debate onto the back three, which again is difficult because I think there's a lot of class players to choose from. Let's see what you've gone for, Dan.
Run through the whole back three for me, yeah?
Go on, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've gone for Josh Adams at 11. I've got Anthony Watson at 14. And I've gone for Liam Williams at 15 because of the aerial side of the game. I just think they're going to be putting it up there high. And Liam's fantastic, and he's the best, isn't he, under the high ball. So that's my back three. And all of them can play 15 as well, can't they? So
yeah,
it's I think that's as safe as we can go for.
I think that's what you said there about all playing 15 is absolutely crucial. If, you know, bearing in mind what's coming from Faf de Klerk and everything,
yeah.
I was leaning towards Hogg at 15, Anthony Watson one wing, and Liam Williams on the other, just so you could have three out and out fullbacks to deal with the kicking.
That's mine.
But now that I think about it, has Hogg actually been really good under the high ball on this tour? Or I'm not sure if he's been as good as he, you know, at his best under the high ball. That certainly hasn't been Liam Williams' standard under the high ball.
No, he hasn't. No. Again, very few are Liam Williams' standard. Yeah. I thought he was fine yesterday. I mean, he's not played a huge amount of rugby on this tour, has he?
Oh, two games.
That would still be mine.
Yeah, if he's going to start, it's on the understanding that he does his best under the high ball. To give him a big lecture before he hand over the shirt. Because then I would go those three fullbacks in the back three. But if the other side of it from Dan's selection is put Liam Williams as the out and out best bomb diffuser, if you like, and then you've got the opportunity then to have some more pace on the wing in Josh Adams, because Liam Williams is not a slouch by any stretch.
No, that's true, though.
He's not international winger speed. He's just fast rather than international winger speed. So if you go Liam Williams at 15, leave out Stuart Hogg, which is a big call, I think. And then you got Azzy Watson as a winger on the right, and Josh Adams, who's been probably the best 11 on the tour. The one thing I would say,
he was until yesterday. I felt he had an error strewn game, which again you get. I thought, you know, obviously he's scored two hat tricks in his first two games, didn't he? But again, problem is it was against piss weak opposition.
Yeah, but yesterday he was great.
He's playing well.
I think that was a service. Hopefully, the service he was getting from inside. I mean, if you're gonna like go across the whole back line and say the hardest man to bring down in the whole of the Lions squad is Van der Merwe.
Absolutely.
Every time he gets the ball, they struggle. The first man struggles every single time. But is he enough under the high ball and chasing back and fielding into touch and all that stuff? I don't know, because that's what he's going to be faced with. I don't know if he is.
But, they'd target him, wouldn't they? If he was in there, they really would. I mean, if he takes the early ball, he's going to feel $1 million, isn't he? But if he they'd be going for him there, wouldn't they? Whereas with Watson, you know, Watson, Liam, and Josh Adams, I don't think they'll still use that tactic, but I don't think they'd really change the game up for it.
No one's really considering Louis Rees-Sammet, are they?
No, I don't. Not certainly not to start.
No.
If you were going for a three on the bench, it's three backs on the bench, I might consider him. But even then, I think it's just a little bit of a stretch at this stage.
Yeah, I think tight, close games, and not his forte. He needs the game to be flying, the ball to be flying about a bit for him to come into his own. And this test series is going to be tight and tense, I think, through all three matches. And even though, you know, obviously everyone's a big fan and we all want to see him playing all the time, I just think it might be 4 years too early.
Yeah, I also think that, like you said there, if in terms of the form that Van der Merwe has shown, not just try scoring form, but like you say, bumping players, always making yards.
Yeah.
That edges him above Louis Rees-Sammet, even with his sprinter's pace, I think. But
he seems Van der Merwe seems to be able to like drive his legs through tackles, even when people take him low. It's not enough. He's a real tank, really hard to bring down. So he still doesn't make my still not in my starting lineup.
No.
I think when he plays for his club, you notice how quick he is. But in this scenario now, in the last few weeks, you've noticed how strong he is as well. Yeah. Really strong. I know he's big, you know, that was always an issue. But you notice when South Africans struggle to bring you down, you know you've got something going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, well, look, are we getting any closer to selecting this side? I think we're all agreed that Watson's in there, right? Whatever scenario you go with, I think Watson has to play.
Yeah, because he's a winger come 15.
Because he's a winger come 15. Plus, again, test match experience. He's a great finisher, pacey. I think he offers the perfect environment for him to play. I think Adams misses out for me.
Really?
I
was surprised by that because he's
one bad game.
Try scorer.
One bad game yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, but he's, you know, look, I really like Josh Adams, you know that, but
he's a proven try scorer, isn't he? Like, you know, season after season, campaign after campaign. And I think those games that he's played, which were against the lesser opposition, he's scored in really tight areas as well. I know he's had some run-ins. And
If you're not picking Liam and Hogg, then Van der Merwe would be higher up the queue than Adams for me.
I was one of my reasons for Adams was coping with the pace of the opposition wingers.
Mm.
Whereas that's my fear with Liam Williams on the wing. So, I wouldn't complain if you had Van der Merwe on the front foot against Chess and Kobe. You know, that's win-win all day. Although Kobe punches well above his weight with his tackling.
Yeah, he does.
He's strong, isn't he?
It's still a matchup you want to see, but what about the other way around? And what about if you've turned Van der Merwe with Kobe running up behind him? That's the worry.
Yeah, and he did get a taste of that, didn't he, on against South Africa, eh? Yeah, I don't know. For me, I can just, we know that the kicks are coming. There's like we're suggesting that maybe the Lions are keeping their powder dry and they've got something else up their sleeve. Like we say, it's not going to be the Barbarians, but there might be some slight variations in the way they play. South Africa won't. They are going to play exactly the way that they did against under the guise of South Africa A, because that's the only way they play. So you know what's coming. It's going to be box kicks aplenty. It's going to be high test in the back three. So for me, I just think that that's why you've got to go with three out and out 15s. And I think the best players on the high ball are Hogg, Watson, Liam.
That was my original selection, but I got distracted by, first of all, Liam Williams being the best out and out 15 for high balls.
Mm.
And then Hogg wouldn't play on the wing, would you?
No, he wouldn't.
So then my thoughts would be, who's the pace is going to cope with the South African pace? For me, that's Josh Adams. So I think we might have to leave it up to Dan.
Well, we've also got if we play Liam at 15 and Adams at 11, there's a nice, they know each other again on that swing. For me, it's quite a straightforward one, the back three. But I've been thinking about it for quite a long time. But there's more exciting, I think, options, but I think that's the less risky of them all. And I sort of keep on coming back to that risk analysis is pragmatic. It's maybe, you know, a little bit conservative, but I think you've got to go that way, haven't you?
I think so.
I think you do. But again, I don't know. I think that performance yesterday cost Josh Adams. When you're getting limited time to, you know, time to kind of prove yourself. For the record, I don't think that Gatland is considering Liam as a winger, if I'm honest. I'm not sure he is. I think he sees him as 15. I think he probably will start him at 15. So, you know, look, I mean, let's be honest. I think if Adams is picked, would I back him to come out and do a stellar job? Absolutely, because the guy is class, and he just tends to get better and better. It's really rare that you see him have a rough game at all, like for anyone. So that's why it was slightly odd. And he obviously, you know, I've no doubt he would bounce back. But I just think where there's so much competition for place, that's where you wanted him to have a big game ahead of the test yesterday. And it was certainly not his best.
With Liam, we need to be sure that he's over his head injury as well. I mean, there have been no noises out of the camp that there's an issue, but it's always a risk, I suppose. I mean, there's so many. Like I said, I think I said it on Wednesday, that probably the tactics of the side on the day will dictate selection more than form and different elements. But because, you know, like 6-2 split and all the other stuff we've mentioned, and whether we're going to go toe-to-toe with them or whether we've been holding back in midfield, we're suddenly going to turn into the Harlem Globetrotters and all that. But we've got 3 days to wait.
Exactly. Right, what are we going to do in the meantime, though? Dan, you have the casting vote as backs coach.
Okay, so we're going with Adams 11.
Adams 11 and Liam at 15.
Liam at 15, Watson 14.
Okie doke. And then if we're working on a 6-2 split on the bench, that leaves, as we said, Mako. Then we have a choice of Ken Owens or Jamie George.
I'm Ken, I am.
I would go Ken off the bench. Out of those two for bench options, I'd go Ken. Dan?
Yeah, happy with that.
Then Sinclair.
Sinclair, yeah.
Yeah.
Then you've got two locks. So because we haven't got Alan Wynne-Jones, it'd be him. I mean, I would say Beard, personally. Yes.
Me too.
It's going to cause mayhem, isn't it, with two
our segments. When you're down to the last couple of second rows in the squad, what's the option? There's only Johnny Hill.
And Henderson.
Henderson.
Oh, yeah. Henderson, yeah, okay.
Mm. Mm. Did he have a slightly tough outing in that A game?
He picked the wrong game.
he did, because he was excellent the game before as well. Yeah. But yeah, you're right, he was a quiet one, didn't he?
Your point you made is really salient, the point about it was a good game to miss, and the boys who played, you know, had it worse. But I think that a lot of those boys are victims of the fact that we wouldn't spread it. Like you know the part where they were down to 13, we were just going, we were just doing the Exeter thing on the line. And it's harsh really to punish those players because that was tactical directive.
Tactical deficiency,
that wasn't their performance. It was they were just being told what the coaches wanted, and that was took the toe up the jumper, call it what you will, and therefore a lot of them came out badly from a game where it wasn't really fair because everyone else has played against second string.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's harsh on Henderson if that's the reason why he doesn't make the pens.
But yeah.
I still would have Alan Wynne and Adam Beard.
Yeah, I would. I think, look, Beard did a lot in that game that, again, it was the grunt work at line-out time and just, you know, swimming through bodies to get those big arms on the ball. That can win you a test match, even if you're bringing it off the bench. You know, you could be struggling in that area and it can shore things up and it just stops South Africa at source. So
he was almost close to being like Lions player of the game, really, wasn't he? Curry was magnificent, but he was it was such an impact for him, wasn't it, from Beard?
It was. Yeah, it was. Right, he's on the bench then. If we're saying it's Gareth Davis and Owen Farrell in the backs, that leaves one back row spot open. Now, this is interesting. So into the mix, you've got Navidi, Watson, Simmons.
I think that's it, isn't it? Three.
That's it, yeah.
This is another one where if you could tell what position you were in with 20 minutes to go, we would make your mind up.
That, yeah.
You know what we said about if you need a try, you want Gareth Davis on the bench, and if you want to close it out, you want Tommy Price. I think it's the same with Sam Simmons. If you still need points, you want Sam Simmons on the bench. And if you're trying to shut things down, you need the other two. I think you'd probably go Sam Simmons.
I would go Sam Simmons because I think, it's just about having as much impact. And that bench gives you a lot of impact. So the plan is, you as long as you're in the game with 60 minutes to go, this bench is going to give you some serious firepower. And Simmons fits that mould for me. Again, if you get an injury to Curry, it's a bit of a concern. Having him kind of cover you as an out and out fetcher.
Yeah, in which case, if you think cautiously like that, then you would go Navidi, because Navidi will do 6, 7, 8.
He would.
Whereas the other two won't do 6, 7, 8.
Dan, what are you saying here? Who are you picking at?
I have a feeling it's going to be Simmons, but I would like Navidi because his work rate's fantastic, isn't it, in defence and attack. And he's kind of fantastic in all those areas, isn't he? You wouldn't say he's better in... I think he's really worked on his attack game. You can see him out wide, he carries well, he links nicely as well. So I'd really love it if Navidi was there. I'm trying not to think that's because I'm Welsh. I'd like to think I would pick him if I was English. But
I don't even know who he is over the border.
No. But, we've got Conan's there, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah, sorry. Conan. You're right, Conan.
Oh, that's insulting. What a big insult they've done to Conan there.
Yeah.
And
he does cover 6, 7, 8, I think.
Yeah.
Or 6, 8, anyway.
7 in a loose sense of the word, I'd say.
Yeah.
I think Simmons will probably get it, but I am slightly concerned about that. Just that it's going to be so hard, so tight, and will we see? Is he the best guy to come on? Will we see like Barnes? You know, like big runs from him? I guess we're only going to know when he's in that position, and for that, probably you'd roll the dice and give him a shot. But
he is probably the biggest impact they could pick.
To go back to who South Africa would like to see coming off the bench the least, I'd say it would be Simmons. Just again, that late in the game. And the other thing with South Africa is based on that game in midweek, they were blowing after 50 minutes. Mm. You know, it was kind of like a heavyweight boxer who'd gone really hard in the first 8 rounds but hadn't managed to knock the oppo out. And I don't know whether that's, you know, whether that's still, whether they'll be fully fit for next week. But if they are tiring late on in the game, God knows, you know, what their selection is going to be like and whether there's any more disruption to that. But with that in mind, again, I just think having real impact off the bench is could be where the test match is won and lost. And I think Simmons is probably the one that gives you that, particularly where you've gone for quite a cautious starting 15, having real impact bench, which we've got to this point. I think Simmons is the one that fits that mould.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
Happy with that, yeah.
Right, Simmons it is. Right, to very quickly recap, the attacking scrum test match side is Wyn Jones, Luke Cowan-Dickie, Tadhg Furlong, Courtney Laws, Maro Toji, Tadhg Byrne, Tom Curry, Toby Faletau, Connor Murray, Dan Bigger, Josh Adams, Robbie Henshaw, Elliot Daly, Anthony Watson, Liam Williams, Makavunipola on the bench with Ken Owens, Kyle Sinclair, Alan Wyn-Jones, Adam Beard, Sam Simmons, forgot his bloody first name then, Sam Simmons, Gareth Davis and Owen Farrell. There we go. It's not a bad bloody side.
What a bench. The bench is.
Bench, isn't it?
I think every single one of those players was in our initial squad. I can't think of any player there. Maybe Adam Beard did make our initial squad.
Yeah, Beard might be the only one, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned him, but...
Yeah, he just missed out, didn't he?
That's probably my fault for being such a massive Johnny Gray fan.
Well, there we go. Like, I mean, if he was in the squad, I'd still be tempted to have him on the bench. But, you know, I've come around to your way of thinking. But that's the squad. Thank you, fellas. Thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yes.
We haven't got too long to find out who makes the real life side, and obviously we'll be with you to bring all that reaction to the first test. Can't wait to see who is in that team. Don't be a dick on social media and slag people off and tag them on it. Like, let's all just be adults about it and have a.
I don't mind it actually.
I know you love it, mate. It drives me mad.
It gives me something to, you know, read in between lockdown. I don't get any abuse online.
It's very easy to go into a doom scrolling where you just see people.
Yeah.
Right, and I sit there and go, I've just spent the morning reading other people rowing with each other. So
oh, I love that.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there we go. So yeah, we've got all that to come. So big thank you to Dan Killick. Big thank you to the Mighty Murph. And of course, as always, big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some top quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. We'll be back to bring you reaction to the first test this time next week. Let's hope for a win. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.